Chapter 16. Jesse Stone didn't miss the cat for a moment. The fact was that he was too much of a cat himself, too solitary, too self-contained. Men don't like to think of themselves in terms of cats. Lone wolf was okay, even admirable, but not lone cat. Female, feline. Could it be that simple? If it was, it was stupid. What creature was more fierce or intimidating than a male lion? Whichever, lone wolf or lone lion, it was beside the point. In the end, it was the lone part that mattered. For all the women he had been with, from Jen, Abby, Marcy, and Sonny Randall to Dee Harrington, he was alone. A cat in his house wasn't going to change that. He supposed she'd been as good a cat as any, and he was glad that he'd found a place for Mildred where she could be properly appreciated. Fran Markham, who ran the group home on Scrimshaw Street, said that Mildred had brought a new measure of joy to the residence. Joy. Now, there was a word Jesse didn't usually associate with his gestures. The hot shower felt good, and the steam helped drive away the last remnants of the hangover headache. The steam and a few more aspirin. He shaved and spent a long time staring at himself in the bathroom mirror. For some reason, he was thinking not about his shoulder, but about the long bus rides he'd taken between towns when he was in the minors. He'd hated those trips. Sure, the first few were interesting, because the scenery going by out the window was new to you, and you were a kid, and what did you know about anything? But they got old fast, those long trips. Then he remembered that the only thing that made those damn trips bearable was the company of his teammates. Even the company of miserable pricks like Julio Blanco. He remembered that it was those rides more than all the meetings and practices that bonded them together into a team. He realized that the play in Pueblo had robbed him of much more than a chance at the majors. It had robbed him of a way of life. One day he was part of a team of men, and the next day he was alone. He guessed he'd been trying to find another team of men ever since, but mostly he'd just been alone. He made himself some eggs and thought about having one drink before heading back into the station. He decided against it. There was a dead girl who needed his full attention, and he knew dealing with the Salter kid's dad was bound to be difficult. He was going to have to try to finesse his way around declaring Benjamin Salter a suspect. He was going to want the father's cooperation. It had been Jesse's experience that poking someone in the eye with a sharp stick wasn't the best way to gain his trust or to get him to cooperate. There was no denying that calling a man's son a suspected murderer was a pretty sharp stick. Jesse looked at Ozzie Smith in his white, red, and yellow Cardinals uniform. As good a glove man as Jesse had been, he would have been no match in the hands department for the Wizard of Oz. But Jesse had once possessed what several scouts had called the best infield arm they had ever seen. That rocket arm had allowed Jesse to play deeper than most shortstops. Deeper meant he could cover more ground, meant he had more time to react, meant he could throw runners out on balls deeper in the hole than other shortstops could ever dream of. That was the beauty of baseball. There was more than one way to be great at any position. Sometimes Jesse imagined himself squaring off against Smith, the two of them at high noon on the field at Busch or Dodger Stadium. Baseball was a game of subtleties and opposites. At bat, the greatest players failed 70% of the time. In the field, if you were anything short of near perfection, you were considered a failure. Homicide investigation could be like that, too, like fielding. You had to be nearly perfect. Martina Penworth's parents weren't going to accept anything less, and Jesse was determined that they wouldn't have to.